The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors. Keep on, keep on.
All right, good morning and welcome to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield Community Radio. I'm Sean Sayre here with you, TGIF. Thank goodness it's Friday. It's the 10th of February and it's a little gray and a little wet out there, and I hear we're going to get some wind today. So that is just the way it's going to be in the weather department. We'll take a listen to that in just a moment also. And we have a special guest here, Pete White, City Councilor at Large, City of Pittsfield, will be my guest for the full hour this morning. And we have just a huge list of stuff going on, Pete. So we're going to be talking about that, and we'll see where that goes. Always a fun and fascinating conversation with Pete White with all the city issues that are going on. So we'll be right back to that in just a moment. First, let's go to the weather forecast and see what our friend Jacob Klein has in store for us today.
Berkshire weather. Here is your WTBR forecast from BerkshireWeather.com for Friday, February 10th. Greetings. Today, mostly cloudy with a high of 47. Tonight, mostly cloudy with a low of 24. Tomorrow, partly sunny with a high of 34. That's your latest WTBR forecast. From Over the Forecast and Education, to BerkshireWeather.com. I'm Jacob Klein for WTBR, and I hope you all have an amazing day. Cheers, everyone.
All right, cheers to you, Jacob. We appreciate that. And thanks, folks, for being here this morning on Morning Drive. Again, it's Friday. You've made it to the end of the week with us all, and I hope your weekend is going to be relaxing and fun if you get to do that. But first, we get through today, and so here we are in the morning. We have Pete White, City Councilor at Large and Vice President, by the way, of the City Council. Good morning, Pete, and thanks for being here this morning.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Sean. It's always great. And I got to say, your show with Brittany Polito for My Berkshires yesterday was phenomenal.
Yeah, she's great and very knowledgeable. And, you know, it's always nice to talk to somebody who's in the room on a lot of these things, right, and listening and paying attention and writing some great stories for iBerkshires.
Definitely.
Yeah. And I'm sure you see her at a lot of the events that you're out at as well.
I do. And I appreciate all our news media, but it's nice that we have iBerkshires that offers a free format. You know, it's online, mm-hmm. but people can read it for free. So people don't get, you know, as upset with us if we share articles they can't read. But, you know, we have good media around here. Mm-hmm. They can't cover quite as much as the Berkshire Eagle does, but they do a great job for being, you know, small and mighty.
It's good to have a lot of different sources of news, you know, not limited to one. And my goodness, there are some areas that don't even have one. So, you know, and I know the loss of the Pittsfield Gazette a couple of years ago was a kind of a big hit for this area, for Pittsfield especially, because, you know, that was Jonathan Levine's baby, and he concentrated just on Pittsfield and Pittsfield issues. And that's, you know, kind of a dying breed in a way of news coverage.
Yeah, definitely miss Jonathan and seeing him, you know, he did the debates. He right. was at every meeting, you know, for one person who usually didn't have anyone working with him. He made it to probably more subcommittees than any city councilor or anyone interested in anything. And, you know, we've just had such a, you know, a wealth of local reporters mm-hmm. and people dedicated to getting information out to people that we've been lucky. And, you know, Jonathan is very much missed.
Yeah, for sure. And anyone who used to read the Pittsfield Gazette and liked that perspective, at least a different perspective on the news, I think was very valuable to the community. But again, we've got good sources around here. We got to, you know, keep reading those and keep supporting them if you can, for sure. So lots of stuff going on in the city. And just watching, and it seems like it's just getting ramped up, right? I mean, in the beginning of the of a municipal election year, there are going to be some big issues that that come to the fore in the next few months. Of course, your budget season happens in another, it's only 5 months away, less. But there's some issues that are coming up. Springside House is getting some attention right now, and I know that's an issue that's going to be on the next city council agenda on Valentine's Day, the 14th of February. The mayor's asking for $500,000 to be spent to match a federal grant to Springside House. How's that process looking?
It'll come to us on Tuesday, and it'll probably go to finance, I would imagine, because it's over $75,000, but, you know, I would be ready to vote on it. I grew up in Springside Park. I know that when I posted that, it's gotten a little bit of heat. You know, people kind of question how much money is going into that, but a municipality and the state, we have a responsibility to maintain our historic sites, and we don't want to lose our history. So to me, it's important that we support projects like this that let us keep that history. And also, once it's developed, you know, it's looking at, it could be, you know, used for a community organization. You know, it used to be used for the Parks Commission. I've gone through that house so many times with Jim McGrath and Joe Derwin, looking for, you know, old documents, old signage. When the parks programs were in more parks than what they're able to, what we're able to do now. You know, there's old signs for the zoo in there, and there's really a lot of museum pieces in there.
People don't realize that there was a zoo in Springside Park.
Yeah, it was one of my, unfortunately, one of my first memories is, you know, of going and seeing it after it burned. You know, I don't remember it too much before that, but I can remember we went to a movie, and then we went up there, and you could still see the charred remains, which is really sad. And that park just has so much history. The house has so much history. It's one of the oldest in Pittsfield. The articles are out there for people to do the research on that, but I think it's important. You know, I was a history major. We don't want to see our history destroyed. We want to be able to look back and see what things were like and have beautiful places to do events at and to, you know, have offices that are not just all downtown at City Hall.
Yeah, and the decision-making behind that is you know, you don't get to look at everything and say, okay, we're going to save this building, but these buildings are going to go away, you know, and you can't look at everything in at one time. But it's easy to look back and say, gee, I wish we had saved that one, right? And that's kind of what we were talking about yesterday with Brittany Polito from iBerkshires was, you know, and she's a fan of historical buildings as well. You know, you must be able to find some reuse for buildings that mean something and that can support it, right? There's some that maybe aren't, you know, historically important or significant. You know, I understand the need to sort of refurb neighborhoods and to change and to build new, but there's some times when it just makes sense, and Springside House may be one of those, where you have to invest in it in order to keep it.
Definitely. And people see the price tag. And with that price tag, it's definitely questionable about why we would put so much money into that site. However, you know, there were state requirements. There's historic site requirements. You know, as Joe Derwin pointed out on one of my posts or one of the posts that I was reading, you know, they had to do an archaeological dig. There was asbestos abatement. You know, there was a lot of things when you renovate a building that would definitely not be there if you were just to create something new. You know, we saw the same thing when they were making the decisions of, do we, you know, renovate Taconic or do we build a new school?
Right.
And when you're looking at renovations, they're almost always going to be more costly because you just never know what you're going to run into once you peel back one layer and see what has to be remedied.
Yeah. But, you know, you can look at comparison, let's say, Taconic and Pittsfield High Schools, the buildings, you know, not the institution, but the buildings. And you think about Taconic, built in the late 60s, the original building, you know, during the baby boom when, you know, they just needed to build space because they just had this huge influx of students and really, you know, oversized classrooms. I mean, just it was crazy, right? So you had to have another high school. You had to have more buildings to house all these new students. And maybe, you know, it was a building of its time, and it wasn't necessarily significant. It made a lot more sense to build something new and modern, energy efficient, you know, meeting the educational needs of today. Pittsfield High School, that's another story, right? That's a monument to really a significant building in Pittsfield. And that's probably a building in the next couple of years is going to need some love, right?
Yeah, and it's, you know, I think with the original Taconic that I graduated from in 96, that building was never made to last as long as it did. You know, that goes to the credit of the city and school building and maintenance departments that kept that place going as long as it was. And with the new school, I hope that we put in that maintenance up front and that we keep it nice so we don't have to be looking at replacing it. With Pittsfield High School, that's it's a landmark.
Yeah.
You know, when I come back from Albany, I was at a Jeff Dunham show the other night for comedy. When I go over the hill in Gale Ave, I can see the dome. You know, that's just part of Pittsfield.
Right.
You know, if that was ever gone, you know, we'd be losing something major. Whether it always is a school, you know, I would be open to the debate happening again of should we expand at the Valentine Road site. I'd be in favor of, you know, the two school on one campus plan that I think Mayor Roberto was more in favor of back in the day, and we just didn't see it. You know, population changing, however, having all resources at one spot, and then I think we could have some really creative reuse for Pittsfield High. I think it would make a great city hall. I think we could move in all our outward buildings into it and just really make good use of that site and still have it open to the public, still have that dome shining every night, you know, potentially still use the fields behind it. You know, but I think we need to have those discussions, but we definitely need to make sure that it's always there.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's going to be a big topic when the school building needs process sort of starts the engine again, right? And I know it's always a process, but there are definitely needs. And, you know, I know I'm talking to a city councilor and not a school committee member, but these are issues that affect all of the city. And, of course, all of the school buildings are city buildings, right? Ultimately, those are decisions that really have to be made between the school committee and the city to how these things are going to be either used, reused, renovated, you know, what kind of money comes in from the state or federal to do any of this stuff. It's a big process.
It is, and, you know, I give all the respect to our school committee members. They are elected. They will all be up for election this year. You know, they're the ones who make the decisions for our students, our teachers. You know, they're the ones who made the decision that Taconic is going to be all vocational. Now, when I make comments about the schools, I'm making them basically as a citizen and somebody who's going to, at the end of the day, have to, you know, approve that bottom line budget.
Right.
So I do have a say in that bottom line budget, but it's the day-to-day activities. They keep the schools going. They make the decisions, not city councilors. And I really wish that the general public would reach out to school committee members as much as they reach out to their city councilors, because those elections are just as important as what we're doing. That's basically half our budget.
Yeah, for sure.
And we need to have people in there that know what the community wants and what our students need just as much as we need people on the city council that are going to listen, do their homework, and make sure that we are making decisions that are good for everyone. And it's not easy.
Yeah, and you mentioned Taconic becoming an all-vocational school. Obviously a huge decision that the school committee had to arrive at, and did take, you know, quite a while. It was a very measured decision in a lot of ways. What's your opinion of that? Is that going to be good for Pittsfield, good for students, good for the schools?
From what I've seen, you know, I wouldn't question them even if I disagreed, even though I'd say something. But I think with putting the money that was put into making that a vocational school, with how much we need new tradespeople, with how much of the workforce needs to be redeveloped, and we need to make sure that we're making sure that all of our businesses in the area and all of our students have successful futures, I think it was the right move to make. You know, more money comes in to Taconic if a student choice is in from another school district,
right,
going into the vocational programs. You know, we know we lose our students to other school districts. I'm hoping that part of the plan with this is, with PHS being academic, that hopefully we can ramp up some of those programs and we can convince. And I don't even know if we need to, you know, I think it's more convincing and marketing. I think the programs are good now. We need to convince people that our Pittsfield schools are as good as we know they are. Because I think that's somewhere where we lose the battle. Sometimes the class sizes are too big. Sometimes a program in another district fits better, and that's a choice for that parent and student to make.
Sure. Yeah.
But I think we have a lot of opportunity with this to keep expanding and making sure that our future is bright. But also, with Taconic being vocational, I've had a lot of questions being, well, won't those kids still need to, you know, will they still be able to get into college and everything else? You know, I went to college after graduating with a shop high school diploma. Mm-hmm. You still have to take all the same courses. Still, unfortunately, have to pass MCAS. I would rather that be a better testing system. But our students are going to be educated, and if anyone thinks vocational now or career technical and vocational education, CVT, is what it was, 50 years ago, you could run a business. You learn how to do everything with it. Mm-hmm. You're not just learning how to cut a piece of wood or something like that. You're learning everything that goes along with that trade.
Yeah.
And I don't think that our vocational classes get the respect that they deserve. Mm.
Well, it's hard getting past the 50-year-old stereotypes a lot of times. And yet, if you were to come and visit Taconic High School and look at the shops and look at what the students are doing and learning and preparing for, you might really change your mind in terms of how, because we're all stuck with those ideas of what school is. As you get older, those ideas sometimes don't change. You just remember your experience in school, or it doesn't grow with you. But things are changing, and the Pittsfield schools are really meeting 21st century ideas of what this happens. Obviously, there's going to be a need to work on Pittsfield High School, though, after this switchover, right? And that's I think what a lot of people are thinking about now. Okay, you've got all these students who would have been going to Taconic, now they're going to PHS, and that facility isn't really the most modern facility. It's got a lot of needs. How do we do that?
Unfortunately, the way the city does things is to, well, I'll go back a minute. I was going to say it's unfortunate that, the way the city raises money is through property taxes. However, the state has, you mentioned the School Building Needs Committee.
Right.
And we have that school building needs fund from the state. So when schools need to be renovated, the state has a process for that. So we need to make sure that we are advocating to the state to get PHS in line for every dollar it can get from the state. So it doesn't have to be just local property taxes going into it. We need to protect our local people here. Right. Taxes, we hear about them. If they go up by a penny, if the rate goes down, but the valuation on the house goes up, it still hurts people at home.
Right.
So we need to be cognizant of that. And with the school building funding that can come in, I think that's important. Unfortunately, we don't have that same sort of thing for our new police station that we need. And I wish the state would come up with a plan to help cities and towns with aging infrastructure of our, police departments, our fire departments, because we're seeing it all over the place with towns around us. North Adams is moving their police station. Yep. Lanesboro is doing theirs.
Yep.
Now, they're smaller places. They have less population. It's going to cost less money for them to do theirs.
Yep.
Ours is going to be expensive. But if you've been through our police station, it needs replacing. Whether or not you support the current mission or current ways policing is done, we need a lot of reform in that department nationwide. Our department here needs better facilities.
Yeah, and you mentioned other towns. Williamstown, I think, is also planning or building a new fire station. So, they have a life. They have a certain life that you can expect out of some of these buildings. The police station in Pittsfield's coming up on 90-something years old, I think. It's pretty close to that. So,
and if you go by it, you'll see on the side closest to City Hall, it still says welfare on the side of it.
Yeah, it does.
No, that wasn't built, I believe, as a police station.
No.
It was a multi-use building that has turned into the police station because their needs, the mission creep on the police department just keeps growing and growing.
Yeah.
We ask them to do everything, and we don't always give them the right resources that's needed. And that's not always monetary.
Mm-hmm.
That could be, a building that allows other agencies to come in and work with them easier because there's desk space.
Yeah.
And for the general public, having an accessible building to get into.
Right. The basic accommodations of 21st century building, you know, the expectations that we have of it when you're looking at a building that was really built for 1932 or 37 or whatever it was. Very, very different. City Councilor Pete White is here, Vice President of the Council and Councilor at Large. This is Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR FM. And I'm just getting started here with some stuff. Bike lanes, the issue that won't die, as I said yesterday. We're now talking about getting a ballot question that could be binding or non-binding, I don't know, to return North Street to the traffic pattern that it was before the bike lanes were instituted. What's your opinion of putting it on the ballot? I don't necessarily need to know whether you think the bike lanes are better or worse, safer or not safer, but the process of putting something like that, that is usually done by department heads and paid professionals in a city, and then maybe vetted by elected officials like yourself or the mayor, and now turning that decision over to the voters. Is that a wise thing?
I voted against it. Let's start right there. I don't think that items like this, even though the general public needs to have their opinion heard, and we need to listen to everyone's opinion on it, and make it the best situation for all. I don't think putting something on the ballot, especially with wording of basically yes or no, you know, mm-hmm. do you want it the old way or do you want it the way it is? Mm-hmm. I don't like either of those options. Mm-hmm. I don't like the bike lanes the way they are right now. I'll agree they're ugly. I'll agree they can be confusing. However, having that bike lane, being somebody who's used those bike lanes, you know, on the scooters, I hope to get my bike up there. You do feel safer having a designated space and not just having to share a busy road. So I would like to see that go forward. I'd love to hear more. I still need to watch the Traffic Commission meeting where Downtown Pittsfield Inc. presented their idea of having diagonal parking.
Right, that's another
with
issue.
A less wide bike lane, which I think would be less confusing for people because you would see that it's not a lane that you should be driving in. Hopefully you see the bike symbols on it. I know in winter that gets a little sketchy. But I think going to diagonal parking, I think I saw somewhere it could increase parking by 40%. I think that's the direction we should be looking in. And with a ballot question, it's going to be yes or no. Yeah. It's not going to be yes, maybe we could make improvements, or no. So I think wording is important when things go on the ballot. And also a lot of thought, as much as people don't always think about it when they see the headline, or if, you know, your conversation pointed this out yesterday, not everyone realizes how many subcommittee meetings there are. People don't realize that we have full-time dedicated staff of the city of Pittsfield who work with the Department of Transportation. They work with other engineers. They put smart designs in, and then the city council vets them. I'm not saying that everyone in the public wouldn't put that much in to a ballot question, but I would doubt that it would get the full, you know, vetting that it needs.
Well, especially if you're boiling it down to a yes or a no.
Yeah.
I mean, essentially that's what you're saying, is that it's hard to really fully understand, other than sort of the emotional pull of the question, right?
Yeah.
Which there is a lot of that. There's not necessarily a lot of rational thought about whether something is safe or not, or, you know, it's really more of an emotional gut thing for a lot of people. That's what it seems like.
Yeah, and, you know, I'll look at some state ballot questions like the bottle bill, you know, which I think we'll all agree it'd be nice to have, you know, water bottles, or most of us will agree. We won't all agree
no,
on anything.
No,
water bottles, you know, non-carbonated, I would love to see those, you know, have the same deposit on them. But I voted for the ballot question, but I hated the way it was written. I didn't think it should be like tied to inflation. I don't think they should have automatic, you know, raises in the cost on it. You know, it should be a set way of going about it if you're going to do that. But if you put it to the legislature can listen to everyone and put forward something that would hopefully, you know, work out for everyone. You know, and normally when things get to the ballot, it's because the legislature has failed to act. The bike lanes were put in about 3 years ago, maybe four. The pandemic time is hard to keep track of. The first design was horrible. It didn't work. So we listened to the public. We pushed on the administration. and they changed it. Mm-hmm. And I think the second iteration of it was a lot better than the first. I think maybe the third iteration, maybe the fourth, we'll get it right. Hmm. But that's how government works. We keep trying until we get it right. And, you know, I hope people will still go down and support those businesses that are down there. You know, I'm down there 2 days a week. Mm-hmm. With the bike lanes, I find it a lot safer to cross the road.
Yeah.
I don't have to worry about four lanes of traffic coming at me. You know, if one person stops, is the next person going to stop? I see the bike lanes used all the time. I see people in scooters. Mm-hmm. They're used. So I think we need to find a way to kind of make both sides a little happier. Both sides don't have to be fully happy. Mm-hmm. But until we have, you know, a way, you know, during streetscape, it would have been great if they put it at the edge of the sidewalk, like you see in some Boston neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. That would be the perfect design. Mm-hmm. I don't see us putting that much money into it this time around.
Yeah, you can't change it. You can't change all that with paint,
right?
For example, so you really have to change the design to get it to something like that.
So I think the diagonal, increased parking by 40%, so people can't say there's nowhere to park. Hmm. I think that's the way we should be looking at it and making improvements as we see them tested, not a yes/no ballot.
Yeah. Interesting. And lots of stuff like that is going to come up, and we'll see. What's the actual procedure of getting something on the ballot? Because it's not just a simple council vote, right? There's a lot more to it.
Well, that seems the council can put something on the ballot, from our understanding.
As a binding issue?
I believe so, but that's going to be discussed more, I believe, Tuesday night.
Okay.
Because binding or non-binding was not in the wording of the original petition, so I'm sure that'll come up. You know, citizens can also gather signatures. You know, that's all on the website of how ballot initiatives can be put forward.
It's part of the newer charter.
Right.
The recent charter.
I worry, though, you know, as soon as that one was done, I started hearing people wanting to do ballot initiatives to get rid of other things they don't like.
Mm. Well, so, I guess that's the slippery slope, right? I mean, at what point do you decide that something is a good thing to put on the ballot as a binding question that would actually, the voters will change whatever it is being done, and what things don't really make sense to do that, right? I mean, and there's no real easy guide on that, too, because at the state level, there are some questions on the ballot that you scratch your head and say, really, do we need to make that decision as a voting population, or should we leave that to our elected officials? But there are lots of things that are changed that way.
Yeah. And on the state
in a positive way.
Yeah, and on the state level, a lot of money gets brought into it, too. You get a lot more big companies lobbying for or against something.
And dark money.
Yeah, that they see in their best interest. Mm-hmm. You know, so I don't know if it's quite, I would rather an elected official that I know who's donated to their campaigns. I know, you know, you get to know them face-to-face making decisions, but there are some people who believe in the ballot process. We have both here. So if the process goes forward, it goes forward. Mm. I think that, you know, city government with a city council is different than, you know, a selectman form of government where the select people, you know, go to town meeting and put everything on the ballot and, you know, everyone votes that shows up.
Right. Which you can do in a town of 2,000 people.
Right.
You can't do in a city of 42,000, you know, or more. It's just, it's too unwieldy, right? You can't get enough people in a room, and the process is just, that's why we have a representative government. Even the larger towns have elected representatives to town meeting, so that, you know, not everybody has the Norman Rockwell, picture in your mind of the guy standing up, you know, with the sign. So that's great in Stockbridge, and it does work in Stockbridge, right? I've seen them. Lennox and Great Barrington has, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 days worth of town meeting where everybody comes to Monument Mountain and votes on all the issues.
Right.
That works great to a certain level.
Yeah, I would rather see us open up voting to make it available for more people. I don't see why we couldn't have in town elections, city elections, you know, start voting at 16.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we allow people to drive. We allow them to make a lot of important decisions. I think 16-year-olds could really add to the process, and also having, you know, same-day voter registration, having, you know, vote by mail if that's the way to go. I prefer early voting. I think every election should have 2 weeks before it that you could vote, not just one day. I think that's pretty archaic. But I think we could continue to open up government. And I hope we can talk about more of that in the second half,
because
there's so many ways that we can get more information out there. You know, you do a great job with PCTV and WTBR. iBerkshires and the Eagle puts things out there, you know, but we also need people to somewhat pay attention to what we're doing beforehand, and that's also, you know, getting more information out to people before a vote is taken.
And we have to engage people, right, in civics and get them involved and interested in the process. And that's, like, as I've said, the foundation of democracy. If you don't have that from the very foundation, it's very hard to build it up to the higher levels, and that's maybe where we're seeing some dysfunction in Washington these days. We can talk about that in the second half. We're actually getting to the top of our break hour here, coming up on 8 in the morning on Friday, February 10th, and you are listening to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR FM. More in just a moment with our guest here, Pete White, City Councilor at Large, Vice President of the City Council. We'll be right back after this.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM. The Berkshire's only rock station, 89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community Action Council. BCAC is in need of licensed contractors to service low-income clients who are in need of insulation and heating upgrades, offering a consistent project pipeline, quick payment turnaround, and more. Contact Julie for more information at 413-418-3664.
We all know WTBR is great to listen to on 89.7 FM, but did you know that you can listen to WTBR just about anywhere? We've got a web stream, and it's easy to use. Go to WTBRFM.com on your computer and click play. You can use the TuneIn app on your smartphone and connect it to your car's sound system. Or you can use your smart speaker. Just say, Alexa, play WTBRFM, and there's your community radio station. WTBR, for the love of radio.
The motto of the Lions Club is, we serve. And for 99 years, the Pittsfield Lions Club has served our neighbors and aided causes both globally and right here in Berkshire County. Join the Pittsfield Lions Club as we grow our membership to explore new opportunities to serve our community while we prepare to celebrate our first century of service in the Berkshires. To learn more, please visit www.pittsfieldlionsclub.org or follow us on Facebook. Thank you.
Support for this public service announcement comes from Berkshire Community College and Park Square Productions.
WTBR-FM is listener-supported radio. That means we depend on your donations to keep the station on the air. All the local content and the music you love requires your support. You can make your donation today at WTBRFM.com by calling 445-4234 or stopping by our studio at 4 Federico Drive in Pittsfield. You'll be glad you did. Pittsfield Community Radio, for the love of radio.
Radio for people who used to love radio. Welcome back, WTBR.
And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, welcome back to Morning Drive, 8:02 in the morning, and thanks for being with us here on a Friday, February 10th. We're here with City Council Vice President Pete White, and we're talking about all kinds of different city issues that are affecting everybody in this time. We've got kind of a cloudy gray day out there. I don't know if we're going to see some sun or not today, but let's listen to the weather forecast real quick and find out if we can get any insight on that. Take it away, Jacob.
Berkshire weather. Here is your WTBR forecast from BerkshireWeather.com for Friday, February 10th. Greetings! Today, mostly cloudy, with a high of 47. Tonight, mostly cloudy, with a low of 24. Tomorrow, partly sunny, with a high of 34. That's your latest WTBR forecast. From Over the Forecast and Education, BerkshireWeather.com. I'm Caleb Klein for WTBR, and I hope you all have an amazing day. Cheers, everyone.
All right. Cheers to you, Jacob. Thank you very much for that. That's the answer. Mostly cloudy, mostly cloudy, mostly cloudy. It is what it is.
I love hearing his reports in the morning. I get his email every day that I look at to try to figure out what the weather is going to be like. And it's great when we have dedicated youth that are putting so much into what might be their future career.
Right.
And I know his father and met him a few times and just love seeing our young people step up and be part of the process.
Yeah, it's fun to see that he enjoys it. He's dedicated to it, and he's consistent with it, right? I mean, every day you can hear his forecast, which means he's putting time into it as a youth, as a student here in Pittsfield, because he wants to do that. Really happy about that.
Someone has to be the next Steve Caparezza.
That's true. Absolutely true. So Pete White, Vice President of the City Council, and we're here talking about city issues, couple of economic development issues. So electromagnetic applications. The mayor is putting forward a request for some economic development money, $250,000, to help that company grow. How do you feel about that?
I voted in favor at subcommittee of EMA's $250,000 moving forward to the council. I think that when we have, you know, there's two lines of thinking. You can either put money into businesses that are struggling and failing, or you can put money into businesses that are thriving and expanding. It's a safer gamble when you put money into businesses that are doing well. You know, for the amount of money that how it breaks down with the number of employees they're going to bring in, we're paying about $31,000 once. For a year of the salaries of people who are going to be making $60,000 to $65,000. Those people are going to be spending money here in our community. Those people are going to be hopefully buying houses here in our community. And that money is going to stay here in our community. And also, with the technologies they're bringing in, they work with so many other companies that they fly here or have however they come in, they get to see our area and see where they may want to expand. You know, we need to make sure that we're investing in our future and making sure that those jobs that, you know, we're sending our students to, you know, are here when they want to come back. And, you know, creating eight over the time period of this agreement, eight new jobs that are paying $65,000 plus is a pretty good investment with money that originally came from the GE settlement. That is meant to reinvest in having businesses so we have that thriving economy as we did once when GE was here and doing well.
So those are the requirements of this particular funding is at least eight.
Well, there has to be.
And how long do they have to be kept for?
I would have to pull up the exact rule, but it has to be a job that pays, I believe, over $31,000 for, you know, that they bring in for a time period of the agreement. And it's not just $250,000 all at once. Some money goes into buying the equipment, and then there are triggers they have to hit to have the money go through.
So it's still a good value for the city, and that's the question, right? So the GE Economic Development Fund, which it used to be called, you know, has been around now since the late 90s, early 2000s. So we're going on 20-plus years of having some of those funds. It won't last forever. It's a limited resource that we have. And of course, it's been spent on other companies that didn't work out. And that's going to happen, right? You're taking a risk sometimes by laying this money out and hoping that allows a company to grow and thrive here in Pittsfield and, of course, bring jobs and bring prosperity to the area.
Yeah, and the process has changed along the way as well. You know, when the first monies came out of that account, when it was the GE Economic Development Fund, you know, there wasn't a set rule in place. I believe our Director of Finance, Matt Kerwood, when he was a city councilor, was instrumental in writing the rule that we follow now. And then as it moved on, the Community Development Department, who vets the businesses, they look at their financials, they're looking at, are they a viable company? What are the chances of this surviving or not? You know, there's city staff doing so much more work behind the scenes than anyone ever sees just at a city council meeting. You know, we're lucky to have good city employees doing that work to advise us. As that process has grown, you know, there are clawbacks. You know, if a milestone is not met, money is not released. So it's not the days of, we're going to give you $1 million regardless of what happens.
Yeah, no strings attached.
You get the $1 million.
Right.
There are strings. They have to meet benchmarks. And it's become a better process just by going through the process.
Mm-hmm. And then, so the sort of related question to that is disappointment over Wayfair, right?
Yep.
Which is a kind of a big hit, especially for something a few years ago that looked very, very promising. Now, granted, it was a call center, which they invested a good amount of money in the physical building, right? And offices, office space, things like that, was promising 300 jobs for the city of Pittsfield. I'm not sure that they ever got there to 300. And then, of course, pandemic, right? And almost immediately after that happened, changes the landscape of work, of remote work, especially things for call centers. Is it just a victim of that, that we were suffering, that it just, you know, had so much promise but just was never going to work out?
In hindsight, it's always easy to, you know, say something wasn't going to work
right out.
Right,
it's easy to see it.
At the time, looking at Wayfair, looking at their practices, looking at their CEO was, you know, a Pittsfield High graduate who wanted to come back and do something for his town as well.
Great story.
You know, call centers, we all know, anywhere, I love if you can actually get a person on the phone. You know, I would love more call centers versus that press 9, press 10, press, you know, I get frustrated as soon as those things start up. So I think the call center idea was a good one,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I don't see it as, you know, something we would have seen failing. Mm-hmm. And I definitely don't think anyone saw the pandemic coming. I know I've gone back and forth online with a few people on this, but the whole landscape has changed. You
right.
know, my job was something that we always heard you wouldn't be able to do from home. You know, I write resumes with people. I do cover letters. Mm-hmm. I do job applications mm-hmm. with people. I contact businesses, you know, to get people jobs.
Mm-hmm.
That's not something we ever saw being able to do over Zoom or Teams, yet we made it work.
Had to.
And right. when people saw that you could do more from home, and sometimes you got more productivity out of people, because I know when 5 o'clock hits mm-hmm. and I was still working on something and I was already home, I keep working on
mm-hmm.
it. You know, whereas if I was in the office, I would just leave. You know, we're seeing downtowns across the country suffering because people are only at work 1 or 2 days a week, where versus, you know, we had restaurants that were getting business 5 days a week from mm-hmm. a full workforce.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing, you know, office space landscape change completely because people just don't need the office space as
right.
much.
Yeah, you know, and people, that changes the dynamic
so
quite a bit, right?
Yeah, so with Wayfair, I think it was a perfect storm of mm-hmm. things that happened. And, you know, I think it's sad. They promised 300 jobs. I think 40 are going to keep to that call center. But how do you really know once it goes remote of where people are coming from?
Yeah, impossible.
You know, right. so I think we can't be afraid to make investments
mm-hmm.
because then we'll never invest in anything and we'll just stand still and we'll be spinning our wheels saying, why don't we have any new businesses here when other places are getting new businesses? You know, we've got an area where we have to be able to compete with the Albany area, the Springfield area, you know, to convince somebody that, yeah, we have some rail lines here, we have great amenities, we have better quality of life than I would say probably anywhere. You're close to, you know, you can drive into New York City easily, you can go to Boston, Albany, Springfield, you can see great shows. I'm seeing Draw the Line, the Aerosmith tribute band here tonight at the Colonial.
That's great.
You know, there's so many things you can do in this area
mm-hmm.
that we need to keep letting people know what we have, but sometimes we need that financial investment to make them choose here, stay here, expand here versus going somewhere else. And then sometimes, like with EMA, you know, they've chosen to be here because of all the reasons I mentioned, because it's great quality of life, because they mm-hmm. can see raising their families here,
mm-hmm.
because they want to invest here. You know, I think they're, you know, on top of our $250,000, I think EMA is putting in like $3 million of their own money.
Mm.
So if you have $250,000, they can leverage a company putting in $3 million, you know, and expanding from starting as a startup at the BIC,
mm-hmm.
the Business Innovation Center, and then moving into empty office space that we had across town. You know, those are the investments that I see keep Pittsfield going. You know, spouses come in with those 8 new employees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they might bring their families here.
Which is another reason why schools are important, right?
Exactly. We, you know, we keep improving our area, we'll see the dividends.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All those pieces have to work together. It isn't one thing or another. And again, it's not a simple yes, no, like we talked about with the with a ballot question. There's a lot of things that have to fall into place to make the conditions right for a business to come in and say, okay, this is the place I want to invest in and operate my business and grow the business, right? That's a very, very difficult thing. And probably, you know, that decision point alone, when you're choosing among different areas of the country, not only of the state, but of the country to locate a business, what are those things that appeal to people?
Michael Jordan didn't make all his shots. You know, Larry Bird didn't hit every three-pointer.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, we hope that everyone that we invest in is a success, and the community development staff do their due diligence before it ever comes to us.
Yeah.
So we can be making the best decisions and also listening to people in the area on how they feel.
Mm-hmm.
But we hear, why don't we have GE? Why don't we have GE? Why don't we have GE?
Mm-hmm.
We're not going to have that, or I don't think we should have that one company that can collapse our entire economy. If we can build up these smaller companies so we have a multifaceted portfolio of places for people to work, and businesses coming in and out, that puts us in a better place than having one GE.
Yeah, for sure. Those were the days in a lot of ways, but that also led to a very vulnerable place for the area of having that one employer that then pulls out, and guess what? You got nothing. So, yeah, diversity of employment is very important. City Council at Large Pete White is here on Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR FM. I'm Sean Sayre. Good to be with you here this morning, 8:15 a.m. And so, you know, I haven't gotten a chance to talk to you about the snowstorm response and the report that the City Council received at the last meeting. Were you pretty much satisfied with what you heard in the report? And do you think that we're prepared for the next Black Swan event when it comes to snowstorm cleanup? Because that was a weird one, right? That Christmas time storm.
Yeah, I was satisfied with the fact that, you know, they identified what could have been done differently. They identified ways they can fight it if it happens again.
Mm-hmm.
None of us were satisfied with the way the streets were on the 24th, 25th, and 26th. Mm. However, I was on the phone with the commissioner quite often Christmas weekend, including right after Christmas dinner, talking to him as he was driving around, because I probably bugged him more than anyone that weekend about the conditions of the roads. They fought it with what they thought were going to be the best methods. It's easy to look at graphs and charts of how much snow fell when the rain was coming and everything after the fact. Once we know it happened, it's easy to Monday morning quarterback anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can watch the replay and say, oh, I wish they had done something differently. During the storm, they put all the trucks we had out. They called in the contractors.
Mm-hmm.
I wish more salt was put down prior to the storm. However, I was also watching it rain.
Mm.
And you would think that a lot of it would wash away.
Too.
Yeah. We never want to hear excuses. Nobody wants to hear me stick up for our DPW, except our DPW people. However, you know, I was watching the temperatures that day, and it went from 53 or 54 on my Apple Watch down to like 8.
Mm.
You know, those are conditions where you're going to get freezing. And then on top of it, expecting 1 to 2 inches of snow, getting closer to 4 to 6,
mm-hmm.
you know, depending on where you are with snow drifts and everything
really
else.
Really completely different than what the forecast held. I mean, everyone knew it was going to rain for a while. Everybody knew it was going to snow a little bit. Everybody knew it was going to get really cold. I think those were sort of the basic tenets. And then, you know, I think the other complicating factor seems to have been that it's, you know, right around Christmas. And it was the first Christmas that a lot of people could get out and be with other people and be with family, travel places, doing those last minute errands. So now you've got the complication of all the cars on the road, packing it all down as it's heading, right? And maybe if it was at a different time where people had an option of being off the road and just hibernating in their house for a day or something, maybe it would have been easier to clean up. Who knows?
Yeah, if we weren't getting 4 inches during rush hour, you know, I remember leaving North Street and crossing during the storm, taking pictures of what had already fallen. And I think the greatest way I've ever heard it put was Mark Strout, the select person in Dalton, that, you know, fighting the snow plowing during a storm, and I'm paraphrasing, is kind of like brushing your teeth while you're eating Oreos. You know, you can push it around and everything, but it's not going to get totally clean.
Yeah.
And, you know, we need to do better. They know that. I don't think there is anyone who works for public services that wishes that that didn't happen and that, you know, they might have thought of something different, but during the time it was happening, they put into effect everything they thought was going to do it. You know, there was no strike. There was no, you know, people leaving the job. Those people were leaving their homes, you know, to go plow for us during Christmas weekend. And, you know, I'm appreciative of what they did. We just might need to look at different resources and tackling storms differently than what we did. Yeah. And, you know, that's part of the debate.
Well, so at the end of the day, then, do you think we're better prepared for the next one based on having this experience and this knowledge of what happened this time? Are we, or do we need to do more things yet in order to be, you know, ready for a weird event like that?
I think we're way better prepared. I've already seen more salt going out on the roads, pre-treating for smaller storms. Even if we don't get hit with it, we've taken the precautions that would help prevent conditions like this. We've looked at having the state, I think, pick up 25% more of our roads. Hopefully we can get that done so they don't stop at our city borders, that they just go through and maintain the numbered routes, which would free up our snow fighters to be able to go and do areas of the city, you know, because other cities and towns are relying on state workers to do that. I think we should be able to get that same benefit. All the money doesn't need to go to Boston and never come back. You know, we should be getting those plows from the state on our numbered routes as well. So I think some good came from this storm. And I also know that, you know, Ricardo Morales, our commissioner, was on the phone, as well as our mayor was, with, you know, Massachusetts Emergency Management and DOT over the weekend. You know, resources were being offered, and I hope those conversations continue to get more state services in so we can put our city resources on other city streets.
And of course, as soon as a big storm like that happens, what happens to the weather? We end up in the 40s and 50s and rain. Just you can't predict this stuff. You don't know. And, you know, we'll be talking about potholes any moment now.
We've already been talking about potholes. You know, climate change is very real. Whether you want to say it's because of human action or not, the climate has definitely changed. We've seen that in ski areas. We've seen that in some ski towns that since 2005. You know, the numbers are just not there for snowmobilers. Industries are changing. They're having to look at different ways of making money year-round if the snow doesn't come. You know, we're lucky to have investors like Milltown Capital who are, you know, spending the money to make snow at Bosque. And looking at technologies that allow them to make snow at warmer temperatures than what I was able to do when I was working up there. So a lot of things are changing. And, you know, I just hope people, instead of putting it on Facebook, go to the City of Pittsfield's website, go to Report an Issue, Public Services, Potholes, enter it in there, let the city know where the pothole is, and then post it to Facebook. You know, you can copy and paste what you put. You can take a screen cap of your report an issue on the PittSmart app or directly on the city website. And then if somebody does have damage to their car based on that pothole and it was shown the city didn't do anything, then the insurance companies look at that a lot more seriously if it's something that was never reported. You know, so we need people reporting to us. City staff can't be everywhere. But we have residents everywhere. If we can get the help of entering in information on PittSmart, it helps create a ticket, it helps create a trail, and it makes it a lot easier for city councilors to follow up on things.
So there it is, the PittSmart app. That's the thing you want to download, and certainly free app and a great amount of help to the city rather than just complaining about it. Complain if you want, but see if you can help make a difference too, right?
Yeah, I try to see it as voice and concern. If I listen to as many complaints as I hear concerns, I think it would wear on me a lot more. But I try to take everything as a concern, because if it was happening to me, I would want it remedied.
Sure.
And I don't think it's just people complaining, even though that's how it's always. I think even on the forums, it's called a complaint.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's just changing up how we look at things and just trying to provide good quality services to the people of Pittsfield.
Yeah. Speaking of complaining, let's talk about the general demeanor at city council meetings, because that seems like it's degrading a little bit. And, you know, the last meeting in particular, it seemed like there was a lot of crosstalk among certain city councilors, where there was, you know, previously a little bit more deference to, you know, the way things used to run. What's happening with that?
I think over the last few terms, we've been dealing with issues that are a lot more emotional. They're not as cut and dry.
Hmm.
And I think people are showing emotions. They're showing that they care about these issues. They're showing that, you know, maybe that a comment made by somebody is bothering them.
But an insult directly from one counselor to another, instead of going through the chair, for example.
I think everything goes through the chair. Before I speak, I always try to thank the president for, you know, Mr. President, through you.
Hmm.
I think we need to, as a council, you know, take a look at how we're coming across, and that's everyone's individual way of being. We're all elected by our constituents, and we're all, you know, many of us are going to be being, you know, asking our constituents to put us back. I think those behaviors should be one of the things we're judged on.
Mm.
You know, and I think we just need to get to a point where, you know, we're taking it down a notch, not getting as upset, but, you know, what individual counselors do is what individual counselors do. It's all on them. And I think President Marchetti does the best job to keep decorum as much as possible. And, you know, except for, like, gaveling everything, you know, you can't tell grown adults always to not say something.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, just think we do have to follow our rules.
Right.
And, you know, maybe we all just need to take that reminder of, you know, we're up there. It can't be chaos.
Mm.
You know, if we all spoke at one time or we all spoke over each other, we'd never get anything done. And the minutes would be even harder to take. Thank goodness for PCTV being able to watch things again. But yeah, I think we all just need to, you know, be nice to each other, and we need to follow our own rules. You know, if you want to speak, you have to be recognized. You know, we don't have crosstalk at main city council meetings. Sometimes at subcommittees, it works out a little better when you only have, you know, 3 to 5 people up there.
Yeah. Seems like the subcommittees feel like more of a discussion, right? You're airing out the issue. You can have a little bit more crosstalk in that respect. When you get to 11 people on a dais on a city council, you really have to follow the rules in order to get business done, right?
Yeah.
And when sort of that personal respect starts to break down, that's when I think the efficiency also breaks down, because now people aren't doing things based on knowledge or evidence. They're doing it on emotion and on, you know, sometimes vengeance.
I would wish we all stick to the issues. You know, I don't think we need some of the we don't need any personal attacks ever. We're all up there to do a job. We're all up there to represent the constituents who put us into office and to try to do the best job for the city of Pittsfield. We're not up there for our own personal agendas. We're not up there, you know, to insult each other. You know, we have people at open mic who come and do that for that purpose, which also doesn't help. You know, we're trying to listen to people and do the best jobs we can. Yeah.
The open mic is an important part, though, because now you're getting the unvarnished, thoughts of the public, right? And so you can take it or leave it, but there it is, right? And unless, of course, they're abusive or they're, you know, personally attacking or whatever, that's something that can be managed. But for the most part, you know, people should be able to speak their minds at that open mic period.
Oh, no, and I would never try to stop somebody from speaking their mind. I just don't think we need the insults with it.
Yeah.
We need to stick to issues. You know, it's not about any of us. It's what we do for the city and how we move the city forward so everyone can thrive and everyone can hopefully live here and afford to live here.
Yeah, for sure.
Is a struggle.
It can be a struggle, right? That's part of the process that we're all watching as it unfolds, right? And that's generally what politics is: you have a limited amount of resources, and you need to be able to spend those in the best way for the public and for the taxpayers, and also to make the place attractive to new people.
Yeah, and I take a lot of heat for the amount I'm on social media, but it's meeting people where they're at. It's being approachable and accessible, dedicated to Pittsfield, which is what I've always promised.
Yeah, those comments, though. The comments section.
Yeah, they can be rough.
I'll give you credit for that, Pete.
They can be rough, but you're hearing what people say unvarnished.
Yeah, you certainly are. All right, Pete White, City Council Vice President, City Councilor at Large, thanks again for being here. Always great talking to you. We'll do it again.
Thanks, Sean.
I'm sure. Have a great weekend.
You too.
All right. Thanks, folks, for being here, and we will see you again next week. Have a great weekend, everybody. Yeah.